Mysterious Universe, Season 33, Episode 3. Coming up on the show, we've got reinterpreting Pillar 43, the Crosby Poltergeist, and the apocalyptic visions of Chan Thomas. I'm your host, Benjamin Grundy. Joining me is Aaron Wright.
What's this Pillar 43?
Pillar 43 is this mysterious pillar at Göbekli Tepe.
Oh!
There it is. It's the one with a vulture or a condor and this three, what people call handbags. You know, there's handbags at the top and there's a man with missing a head and an erect penis down in the bottom right.
Okay, yet another episode this year where in the first 30 seconds there's been mention of penis.
We didn't have any mention on the last episode on Plus.
Oh, thank God for that. At least we got
through
that.
Because there was a story I missed that I didn't have time for. It was this new egg video because we covered the egg explosion, the egg video from what's his name, James Barbie.
Is it Barber?
What's his name again? The whistleblower.
Yeah,
totally forgotten his name.
Yeah, whatever.
But there was this other egg video. Of course, the whistleblower that was interviewed by Ross Coulthard on News Nation. We covered that on the last Plus show, and there was footage revealed of this so-called egg-shaped UFO. Well, there was another egg-shaped UFO posted on 4chan that was supposedly found in Alaska.
Another video or a photo?
It was a video of it being towed by a helicopter or a plane on the end of a cable. Not very convincing at all. It was just some anon 4chan post. But there was a big, long Q&A of all these people asking questions because they claim to also be involved in this secret program
of recovery.
Retrieving these devices or retrieving these craft.
Mm.
And when it got to the biology of the occupants of the craft, all he described was the penis. It's like an alien from another galaxy. You know, they could look like anything with the skin tone, the facial features, the eyes. All he does is describe the genitalia and then moves on to the next question. So like, right, I don't think that's a real story.
Yeah, it's probably not a real story. Although I must say, I mean, after looking at that video more, not the video of the penis, the video that was allegedly involved with News Nation, I'm now leaning more towards it being that balloon.
Like, oh yeah.
Yeah. Like after looking at some of the Twitter, and have a look in the show notes because we linked to a couple of the Twitter threads describing, you know, that what that was. It was essentially a balloon. It looks stunningly similar.
Yeah, we covered this on the last Plus show.
Yeah.
I mean, you haven't seen the videos. I should send you the videos I've seen where people are going through why of it makes sense, that it's not a kind of dirigible. I should also mention that there he is there with his nice wild eyes. Jake Barber, his name is.
Yes.
Jake Barber. His full 2 hour plus interview has been released by News Nation. This is it right here. I think it's still going.
Yeah, you told me you're watching this live.
Yeah, I was just going through it. There was a certain point where he was asked about seeing alien bodies, and he's like, yeah, I've seen them. So a lot.
Does he describe the penises?
I think he does. I think he does describe them. And so what's clear is that a lot was edited out in that kind of 45-minute news.
Well, of course
news
it would
nation.
Be. If you've got a two-and-a-half-hour interview with someone, of course you're going to have, you know, a lot of it edited out if you're going down to 40 minutes.
But they included that dumb story of the underwater hard drives but left out him seeing aliens?
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll go into that maybe again, have another look at it, the full two-and-a-half-hour interview, and I'll link to it in the show notes if you want to catch up. But I like Jake Barber. I think despite his wild eyes, I believe what he's saying, and obviously I'd like to see more evidence, but I don't think we can just easily dismiss this guy. And I've got a little bit more on Disclosure coming up later on in the show because there's a long-awaited documentary by, what's his name, Dan Farrar, who's a Hollywood film producer. It's called The Age of Disclosure. And this has a lot of people involved. And with the Hollywood-style production behind it, it looks really good. But if you look at the About page for this upcoming documentary, he's got Louis Elizondo, of course, but he's got Marco Rubio, Kirsten Gillibrand, Senator Mike Rounds, Jay Stratton, General Jim Clapper, all these former Navy admirals. There is a ton of, you know, high-profile individuals going on the record. There's one former CIA guy saying, yes, I've seen aliens. They never say aliens, by the way. They always use the new
non-human
terminology.
Intelligences.
They always say, I've seen non-human intelligence. Yeah. That could mean a rabbit.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's just say aliens. But
I realized for me, I was actually thinking about it. Like, why am I, because I was rather cynical about this, but maybe that's because I was just exposed to a lot of Stephen Greer, but I was very cynical about it. And I just realized, but the problem is, it's like, yes, of course, the intelligence, UFOs have been around for a long time. And you and I, for almost two decades, have been saying, hey, there's weird stuff up in the sky that's not human. Like, we should talk about it. And it's just, it's like only now that normies are going, oh, hey, those UFOs might be real. It's like, that's why I'm just so jaded about it.
Let me ask you a question. What does this have to do with Pillar 43, Göbekli Tepe?
Oh, we just got off track. So tell me about Pillar 43.
the 12,000-year-old Pillar 43 at Göbekli Tepe in Turkey.
With those man bags. So those bags, they appear actually all around the world.
Yeah, but I'm not sure if they're the same thing. People have made that connection. I'm not sure if it's the same. So there's been a reinterpretation of this pillar by the ethical skeptic. And you might remember we've been covering some of his work, in particular about this, this exothermic core mantle decoupling.
Yes.
The Janibekov oscillation hypothesis. It's a bit of a mouthful, but it's generally this idea that there are these structures underneath the crust of the Earth, deep within the Earth, that are so massive that they can affect the magnetic, polarity of the Earth, and essentially there's some changes going on with them. They're starting to move around in some strange ways, and they could affect the rotation of the Earth, the magnetic poles of the Earth.
Well, there's numerous people at the moment that are claiming that, well, they are, in this field, in I would say alternative research, which is suggesting that a magnetic field reversal is going to happen very soon.
Yeah, so he is giving a new interpretation of what Pillar 43 at Göbekli Tepe is actually saying, and he believes it actually backs up his hypothesis of this kind of core mantle decoupling effect that seems to be ramping up.
And so would the timing be correct? Because it's around, what, a 11,600-year cycle?
I'll just go off Bibu, dude. Bibu's one.
Well,
the only clock I
March.
Need is Bibu Dev Ritra.
Yep.
March 2025 is the end of the Kali Yuga.
It's
all you need to know.
It's got a little feel, though, of 2012 happening. It's just like, oh, will it? Won't it? Is it going to happen? So, yeah, we'll see what happens in 2020.
We'll see what happens. What have you got coming up?
Oh, I want to go into this really fascinating story, actually, which I call the real life poltergeist movie. And it's basically this little development. Of course, everyone should know the story of Poltergeist, where this family moves into this house. And, that's basically the house is built upon a burial ground. It's very paranormal, tacky, I suppose, but it's got this old trope that goes around that you build upon a burial ground that it unleashes very strange and terrifying things in your home. Well, that apparently happened in a development in Texas back in the mid to late 80s, which really caused a lot of problem for numerous homes, not just one. So I'm going to go
and this is the story that inspired the Poltergeist movie, right?
I don't know
the
if
Crosby
it,
Poltergeist?
I think it did. Yeah, I think that's where it actually came from. But the story itself is chilling. Like, it's absolutely terrifying. And I think in some ways it's even more disturbing than what happened in the movie. Although that movie also in itself apparently had a curse attached to it. It's like all of this, this energy that's associated with this entire thing, which seems to be, has that contagion effect associated with it. So we'll be going into that. I also want to cover this story from from Malaysia, actually. I like looking into stories, paranormal stories from other parts of the world and different cultures. And there's this really strange but short story from Penang, which coincides with the story we've covered from Brisbane many, many years ago. If you recall the story of those three girls that were living in an apparently haunted house. And when they moved into this house, it was okay at first, but they started having weird paranormal experiences of footsteps walking through the hallways and that kind of stuff. But one of the women experienced this truly terrifying event where, and I'll try and see if I can find the original video, and I'll just link to that so you don't have to go back.
The lipstick on the mirror?
No, there was like this gangly, like skeletal white form sitting in the tree just outside her bedroom. And it was like looking up to the sky and then looking back down at her. Like, it was a very unusual and strange type of haunting, but something very similar happened in Penang. So we'll be going into that in the Plus extension as well.
Maybe it was just shedding.
Well, that's what, actually, it's funny you should say that, because there is like a an energetic shedding, perhaps. But yeah, we'll get back into that later on.
We've been looking at Whitley Strieber's new book, which has this, like, I'm not ready to cover it yet. I need to read a little bit more of it, but it's a kind of a follow-up, like a spiritual follow-up to Communion, because it's got the same cover, right? But it's got this horrendous addition to the eyes. I'm just trying to see if I can find it here. Can you remember what it's called?
Is it the fifth kind?
The fourth mind?
Yeah, the fourth mind.
Here it is. Look at that cover. Just like, how do we make the most disgustingly freakish and terrifying cover in the history of books even worse?
Do you know, giant eyes to it. Again, I know we were joking when I was like, I'm really disappointed in Bud Hopkins now because of the story. You're like, well, we'll get Whitley's book. We'll see if we could destroy and pan him as well. I don't want to do that. But in saying, I have read this book.
And no, you haven't.
I have.
I heard you skimming it.
And while
skimming is not reading.
Okay. And while
I mentioned several of the stories too, and you're like, oh, I didn't get that.
No, I did. Because by that point, I'm just like, I'm over this. The problem is that his approach is very much, at the beginning of the book, is that, and this is his experience. You know, I haven't experienced this, so I can't comment on, you know, exactly. But he's like, oh, the aliens are basically here to help us because we're facing overpopulation and they need to help us to, you know, not be so overpopulated and protect our environment. I'm like, you're just describing what contactees were describing in the 50s. It's the same kind of thing. It's very anti-human. And I feel like he can't see that it's anti-human. He's making out like it's, oh, no, they're here to help us. Like, it's to help us.
Yeah, you're like, right.
Like, no, they're an invasive force.
You're right. But that doesn't mean that his opinion isn't valid in other respects.
Of course not. Yeah, I'm not saying
that. And the reason I mentioned it is...
Oh, I just think it's like Stockholm Syndrome.
Oh, yeah, it's a little bit like that. But the reason I mentioned it is he does have amazing stories in this new book. And one of them was he was outside of his property. It was in upstate New York, right? And he saw, I think it was three of these entities, these hideous things. They were in the trees or the bushes just quite close to him, like, you know, 10 yards away or something. And they were kind of trying to ignore him, like trying to hide, but they were clearly visible. And he explains, and this has come out from various sources over the years, that the way that these entities...
The poop skins.
...expel their waste from their bodies is they...
Through their skin.
Through their pores on their skin.
Which is why they stink, because abductees commonly report that greys have this horrible smell about them.
And he describes smelling that awful, you know, horrible smell, that sewage-like smell, like dried urine or something.
Yeah, ammonia-like smell.
Yeah, ammonia. And they're kind of like brushing their skin in the bushes. And the way he describes it is kind of funny, because it's like, you know, if you were to take a dump in the bush and someone came and caught you, what would you do? Like, you wouldn't, I mean, what would you do? You would kind of try and avoid them.
Yeah, you'd huddle.
Avoid eye contact.
Yeah, you'd be freaked out.
And that's kind of what they did.
Yeah.
And they were just basically taking a shit in the bushes.
But through their skin.
Through their skin. Disgusting! Anyway, we'll do Whitley on the next Plus show.
Okay.
I wanted to talk about this new Dawn issue, number 208, that just came out. There is a great article in there from someone we've seen speak live, actually, David Throssell. Remember David Throssell?
Oh, is he the AI will create itself to go through time to destroy humanity guy? Is that him?
Yes.
I like that theory.
Yeah, he's a really interesting guy. Yeah. He's a musician for many years, a very talented individual. He's got this new project called The Forbidden Book Club, which is what I flashed up on the screen there, executive produced by Graham Hancock. There's only two YouTube videos so far and a series of articles, and one of them appeared in this latest issue of New Dawn magazine, as I said, number 208. And it's about this mysterious character. I'll just flash him up here. His name's Chan Thomas. And a little bit like Thomas Townsend Brown, this guy. So let me tell you the story. He was born in 1920. He graduated from Columbia in 1943, got a degree in electrical engineering. And after World War II, he worked in highly secret defense projects for some of the big names. So he worked for Bell Aircraft. He was with Douglas for a while. And for these companies, he worked on missile guidance systems, intercept systems.
So all very, for the time, top secret, hush-hush stuff.
Absolutely. The cutting edge, top secret weapons
aerospace stuff.
Tech he was working on in aerospace. And in the 1960s, he had moved to the advanced concepts division in McDonnell Douglas. Now, of course, if you follow the narrative of the history of UFOs from 1947 onwards, these private aerospace companies are heavily connected with the idea of a cover-up, the idea of reverse engineering this technology, McDonnell Douglas among them. And so they did, in fact, this is on the record, that Douglas did in fact assemble an elite team of researchers, scientists, and engineers to investigate UFO reports at the time and discover the underlying science of these craft and try and unlock it. Now, according to Wikipedia, the team's director, aeronautical engineer Robert M. Wood, wrote some four decades later that this Chan Thomas had a tremendously innovative mind and was a totally out-of-the-box thinker. But something happened to this guy, Chan Thomas, while he was working along some of these projects.
What is this image you've thrown up here?
Well, this is just a hint at this saucer, is just a hint at what he may have been working on. But when these innovative thinkers that come along with these novel ideas that tend to push the boundaries and may have some kind of military application, they tend to disappear.
Mm.
Or their work seems to vanish. Again, a la Thomas Townsend Brown and others we've covered over the years. The same thing happened to Chan Thomas. He disappeared off the scene and his work vanished.
He disappeared into a breakaway civilization. They bought him out.
No one knows because you couldn't find any information on the guy.
He's just gone.
There's no, like, this was a guy in the top of his field working for the top aerospace companies, making breakthroughs with weapon systems, and then there's no record of anything that he's working on. Mm. A little bit suspicious. Some of his work that seemed a little bit more benign was classified by the CIA. And
why would you classify relatively benign information?
Well, it was this book. It's called The Adam and Eve Story, The History of Cataclysms. This is the 1993 version that was eventually declassified, or no, actually, this was discovered before the declassification.
Why would you classify this?
Exactly. Why would the CIA classify a book, make it secret, The Adam and Eve Story, The History of Cataclysms? So this was originally published in the 1960s, and it argued, or he argued in the book, that a cyclical destructive pole shift leads to apocalyptic destruction and has destroyed previous civilizations, perhaps many times, and it was going to strike again. In his vision of the book, he wrote, "With a rumble so low as to be inaudible, growing, throbbing, then fuming in a thundering roar, the earthquake starts. Only it's not like any earthquake in recorded history. In California, the mountains shake like ferns in a breeze. The mighty Pacific rears back and piles up into a mountain of water more than 2 miles high, then starts its race eastward. With the force of 1,000 armies, the wind attacks, ripping, shredding everything in its supersonic bombardment. The unbelievable mountain of Pacific seawater follows the wind eastward, burying Los Angeles and San Francisco as if they were but grains of sand. Nothing but nothing stops the relentless, overwhelming onslaught of wind and ocean."
So is he suggesting that a pole reversal would cause tectonic disruptions, which would then cause tsunamis?
Yes, he's claiming a lot of things. And Thrussell points out, well, there's really nothing new about writing about apocalyptic visions. There's not that much new about the pole shift idea because that could be traced back to the 19th century as well.
Mm. And in fact, some of the stuff I've been reading recently about pole shift is that it's not so concerning from a physical standpoint. It's more that a pole shift would be very disruptive to our society now because of our reliance on technology. It would cause significant disruption to our technology rather than causing tsunamis.
Right. But when you put it into the context of someone like Chan Thomas, this unique mind working with exotic technology, with some of the brightest brains in the world, perhaps seeing things that no other human being has seen, and the fact that it's classified by the CIA, it makes you wonder.
It's got to make you wonder.
Was he correct? Was he onto something? Now, the crux of Chan's theory, writes Thrussell, was the concept of a rapid cataclysmic pole or continental shift that would lead to apocalyptic destruction. He wrote in the book, "In a quarter to a half a day, the poles move almost to the equator and all hell lets loose. The atmosphere and oceans don't shift with the shell, they just keep on rotating west to east, and at the equator that speed is 1,000 miles per hour. So it's not just a magnetic pole shift, it's more like the mantle decoupling theory, that it's like a slipping of the crust.
Yeah.
So while the shell shifts with the poles going towards the equator, the winds and oceans go eastward, blowing across the face of the Earth with supersonic speeds, inundating continents with water miles deep.
So this is why this is a global cataclysm.
That's right.
This is civilization ending.
He says, with this shift comes an incredible deep freeze. He claims the temperature will drop as much as 140 degrees in as little as 2 hours. Now, Thrussell links this back to the mammoths that have been discovered in Russia and around the world.
Flash frozen.
Precisely, frozen in Siberia. There was one, the Berezovka mammoth, discovered in 1900. It still had fresh buttercups in its mouth and in its stomach. More recently, just north of Fairbanks in Alaska, he points out the gold miner John Reeves found hundreds of thousands of mammoth bones, lion bones, tiger bones, camel bones, all frozen within the deep permafrost. And this was just in a couple of acres. This is a pretty amazing story. There's actually a documentary about what this guy's found. It's called Boneyard, Alaska. I think I've got the trailer here. I haven't actually watched this yet, but I'm intrigued. Let's take a look at the trailer. Looks like what you would expect. That's where you'd find a mammoth.
By finding something on the ground or in the earth that told me a little bit about our culture and where we came from and what was here before us. Those cool things that we find need to be saved.
They were flabbergasted to see how much material was found in just one day. 100 bones in a day. The secrets in these bones are held in a lot of different ways.
I'm sure in your collection you can easily make a composite skeleton of a steppe bison.
You can make a whole goddamn herd of steppe bison.
I think so. And that would be impressive to create.
Yeah, it would.
The bones which come out of the permafrost are bones which have been frozen since thousands of years. And they look like
look at that.
Animal was living yesterday. So the quality is superb. Ah, here it is. Look. Wow.
One of the really big questions is, why do we have so many bones here?
Oh, it's a huge one.
Yeah. So this is why we should be thankful for global warming.
I'll tell you why. It's because they were all flash frozen in an instant. That's why there's so many there. It's like if you have a herd of elephants and one of them dies, it's not like the whole herd just hangs around and also dies in the same place.
Mm-mm.
Like, I get the idea that you have, you know, burial grounds where they go and pass away.
But not
this
like this.
Like all the species are all flash killed in a moment. This isn't some gradual event. This isn't the gradual passing of time. Something catastrophic occurred instantaneously. And the mammoth thing is so interesting because you look at Siberia, what's there to eat for a giant elephant-like creature there?
Well, I mean,
nothing.
Yeah, but there would have been.
Right. And there would have been because the climate would have been completely different.
Mm.
The landscape would have been completely different. Why? Because the poles are in different positions. That's why. And so you see evidence of this all around the world. I think there's evidence of like hippos found in the remains of hippos found
Sahara,
in Europe.
Wasn't it?
Europe.
Oh, maybe
hippos.
Europe. Yeah.
I'll keep playing the trailer.
How that happened, over how much time did that occur? Very good question. That's something that we'd really like to figure out.
Wow, that's a great specimen. And even a part of the hornchin is attached.
Hey, look at it.
This is really a gold mine, but for bones.
Finding that many bones in that amount of time, yeah, it's not normal at all. That's an exceptional deposit. That's not the sort of thing we find every day.
I suspect the rest of my born days I'll be doing this because it's kind of like looking for treasure. And that's what, in my opinion, and people might think I'm nuts, but these things are treasure.
In everybody, there is a little Indiana Jones.
Looks cool.
So what age would this be? How many thousands of years? Is it thousands of years? It must be.
Like 12 or 14,000 years ago.
So probably around the same time as the Younger Dryas events and the age of Göbekli Tepe.
Something happened.
Mm.
And that's precisely, that's the documentary there, Boneyard, Alaska. I'll link to it in the show notes. But that's exactly what Chan Thomas is describing, this rapid temperature drop. He says, across the continent, the 1,000-mile-per-hour wind wreaks its vengeance everywhere. Every living thing is ripped into shreds. Within 3 hours, the fantastic wall of water moves across the continent, burying the wind-ravaged land under 2 miles of seething water. So you can imagine the sediment. You know, things are flash frozen and then the sediment is just
dumped on top of
dumped on top of them. And that's why you have a place like Boneyard, Alaska, where you've got all these different species flash frozen and buried together. And so Thomas proposed a cycle of this planet-wide destruction roughly every 10,000 years. He called it a cosmic cleaning of the slate. He said, once more, the Earth has shifted its 60-mile thick shell with the poles moving almost to the equator in a fraction of a day. Again, the atmosphere and oceans refusing to change direction with the Earth's shell have wiped out almost all life. And yeah, I mean, he was publishing this. He was being interviewed about these claims. I think he went on, what was the talk show back then? Johnny Carson or something?
Yep.
And then he just kind of vanished. He proposed that the cause of this cycle of destruction were changes in the Earth's geomagnetic structure. Now, he believed it was because the planet was passing through like magnetic voids in the Milky Way. I don't know if that's true. That was just his prediction. But he also predicted conveniently far into the future that we would be facing it again, that it was coming soon. And he was sure to predict it beyond his death.
Right.
He said it would occur past the year 2020. He passed away in, I think, 1998. So the Adam and Eve story.
Well, hang on. You say passed away. Do you mean disappeared in 1998?
No, so
we know that he is dead.
He disappeared in the 60s, right?
Okay.
While he was working on all this stuff. And he wrote this book before he started most of his classified weapons research.
Okay.
But yeah, the CIA classified the book in 1966. It was declassified in 2013.
That recently?
Yeah, but they only released 55 pages of the 284-page book and said, here you go, guys, declassified. I was like, where's the rest of it? Now, what was strange is that the book that I flashed up earlier, this one somehow got released 3 years before the CIA declassified their small portion of it. And this book, this version from Bengal Tiger Press, has everything. It's got everything in there.
So what's missing?
Well, that's the interesting question. So Timothy Windsor over at Speculative History Online, it's a WordPress site, I'll link to that as well. He wanted to know the question, like the answer to this question of, well, yeah, why was it classified? And can we compare the two versions, the CIA sanitized version and this full complete version, and figure out why? Well, he points out that this version is enlightening as to why the CIA may have been so interested in censoring its contents back in the 1960s. There's a passage concerning the funeral of John F. Kennedy.
Oh.
And he says, this is very benign, like a very, just a small two-sentence comment. He says, I remember watching John Kennedy's funeral on television. He said, and most vividly, the incantation given by the Archbishop to keep John Kennedy from the doors of hell. Nothing particularly malicious, according to Windsor. No claim of an inside job, no claim of anything like that. But he says, maybe, just maybe, when this came out, it was too sensitive to have anything about.
Yeah, that. Maybe. Okay. I mean, maybe we're just, you know, reading too much into it.
Maybe. But what else is in this full version that was left out of the CIA,
well,
the classified version?
Actually, that's a good point, though. If it was about that, then why not just remove those two lines? Why remove, what did you say, like 190 pages?
It was 220-something pages.
Right.
That was, the whole original book. There's a lot of weird stuff in this full version that's been left out by the CIA. In it, he gives his own fascinating reinterpretation of the Greek alphabet using Polynesian.
Okay.
He explains the motions of the Earth in terms of the magnetohydrodynamic energy, outlining the research of Swedish physicist Hans Alfvén.
Okay.
All right. Not really a smoking gun. But most curious of all, in his helicoid-based prediction model for future cataclysms. No.
Helicoid as in going around the sun?
I don't know. No. Most curious of all is his helicoid-based prediction model for future cataclysms. You'd think that would be something to do with the sun. This may be another reason for the book's initial censorship, but Cold War tensions, the Cuban Missile Crisis occurring just a few years prior in 1962, maybe it was all just a little bit too much.
A little bit too hot.
For the populace at the time. Mm. It's like you've got...
Yeah, you've just come pretty close to nuclear war. You don't really need to know about, you know, a new cataclysm coming towards
you've
you.
You've got annihilation hanging over your head. You don't need another potential annihilation hanging over your head. Today it's fine.
Oh, yeah, today, not a problem.
No problem today.
Yeah, people live on doom porn these days.
But I realized there was another big one that's been cut out by the CIA. He also claims to possess some kind of extrasensory perception as well as understand how nature creates gravity.
So that last part, I'm not entirely sure, but certainly things like extrasensory perception, I can understand why the CIA would want to suppress that around that time because they had their remote viewing programs running.
It's actually the last part that interests me more than the ESP. And I think the last part is why his book that has really nothing about his weapons research got classified by the CIA. Let's go back to Thomas Townsend Brown. If you remember his work, and especially Nick Cook's Hunt for Zero Point, the ultimate conclusion was that Townsend Brown discovered some kind of anti-gravity principle.
Mm-hmm.
And this effect, very long story short, eventually made its way into the B-2 bomber program.
That's right.
And it was implemented in a kind of electrogravitic lift.
Well, wasn't it somehow electrolyzing the leading edge of the wing to cause an anti-gravitic effect?
Yeah, that's what Nick Cook claimed, and he claims that's why Townsend Brown's work was classified and why it's still under wraps is because the B-2 bomber program is connected with the nuclear capability of the United States, and that's just not something that's ever going to be unlocked. In a, you know, a paper you can download from Wikipedia.
It's only a throwaway line, but I saw the recent interview with President Trump with, was it Hannity, I think? And just there was this throwaway line where Hannity was saying to him, oh, you know, there's concerns out there about, you know, and I'm paraphrasing here, about, you know, your impulsivity and pressing that red button. But that's not what the red button's for. And Trump's like, oh, something completely different. We'd use it for something else. I'm like... What could you possibly use that red button for? Like, is it, does it release a bunch of UFOs? Like,
be cool if it just played a funny sound effect.
Just a clown horn.
Like, yeah. Yeah, like a clown horn.
But I wonder if that's also reading between the lines. Is that suggesting that the president really doesn't have the final say in launching nukes?
Oh, there's obviously a massive process that has to go through. You can't surely think that there's just a button he presses.
That's the whole point.
Like in a cartoon, he just presses a button and all the nukes go.
Not like that. Obviously, like pressing the button would elicit a response team with the nuclear football. It wouldn't be just like you press a button, it just... Oh, but maybe it does though. Maybe you've got predetermined sites ready to go.
What is that button for? Because I've seen other people post that but just haven't
looked
into it.
I don't know. Now I'm intrigued. I've never thought about it before. Okay. But because you said, oh, it's for something else, I'm like, well, I want to know what the something else
Didn't
is.
Didn't Biden just use it to order ice cream? That's what I read.
That's why they replaced it with the clown horn.
So I think this gravity thing is the key because if you think back to Thomas Townsend Brown, it was all about this anti-gravity effect that's connected to the B-2 bombers, connected to the nuke program. And Townsend Brown's work was just scrubbed. Like there's this huge gap. In his history, you've basically got some of his schooling and then poof, he's gone. There's nothing. His name's scrubbed from his university. It's all just conspicuously missing. And it's kind of the same thing with Chan Thomas. He did release another book called Body 2, and it was more about the ESP thing. And so that was kind of okay. Like that was allowed to be declassified. But he wrote this anecdote about something that happened in 1965 in that book. He just mentions being in the airline business for some years, working in engineering and flight testing. But this is something that Throssell mentioned earlier as well. Excuse me. It was actually a MUFON journal issue that came out in October of 2008. There's an entry by a Dr. Robert M. Wood that confirms Chan's role in the aircraft business.
Right.
So this guy claims he was an ex-colleagues of Thomas. Wood states that they were both part of the Advanced Concepts Division at McDonnell Douglas. Wood states that he had become involved in work outside the paradigms of normal science and that it was this perspective that caused him to be more accepting of the ridiculous claims of others, including one exceptionally innovative, Chan Thomas. So Windsor adds that he goes on to say that he hired Chan because he was a psychic who claimed to be in contact with extraterrestrials, who also espoused to him the claims of cataclysmic geology. That opens things up a bit.
He's told him about it?
So yeah, in his other book, he writes about having ESP. He doesn't mention being in contact with extraterrestrials, but he obviously confided in this with the people that he worked with in these aerospace projects. Is that connected to why this book was classified as well?
Well, I mean, yeah, it's a bit of a smoking gun, isn't it?
And what was he working on? And it's intriguing because we've been critical of this idea over the years of all these contactees who claim they get abducted and the aliens give them a vision of the Earth being destroyed in some kind of cataclysm. And it's almost, in a way, a bit of mind control.
Well, it is, because when they show them visions of cataclysms, they blame us.
Yeah, they say
it's humanity's fault.
You've got to stop damaging the Earth or this is going to happen. They show them some kind of cataclysm. So I wonder if the same thing happened to Chan Thomas or something similar. You know, he says he's in touch with the ETs. But maybe claiming he's in touch with ETs came about because he was involved in these aerospace projects that are dealing with reverse engineered technology.
Well, that's the thing, right? Like, let's say he may not even have known that he was working on retrieved technology and reverse engineering. I mean, he may have just been told that we've captured this from the enemy, human enemies, and, you know, we need to work on it. But of course, they're going to come looking. We know from some of these stories, anecdotal of course, that the ETs made contact with numerous scientists because they were trying to find out what they knew about their technology.
And it's been claimed for a long time now that these extrasensory perceptions are a key in understanding the UFO topic, in actually reverse engineering the technology. There's been quotes, there's a Ben Rich is one who has made allusions to this over the years, that the consciousness is the key to understanding UFOs. And of course, going back to Lazy Eyes here, Jake Barber, he made the claim in that News Nation.
Not Lazy Eyes, he's just intense eyes.
I'm being hyperbolic. He made the claim that in their team that he worked for, they used these so-called psionics, which are, let's just say, it's
psychics
that would use their psi powers to pull in these UFOs. As ridiculous as it sounds, he claimed this was how they worked, how they brought down these UFOs. Someone psychic would interface with the craft. So, yeah, it's painting a real interesting picture of this Chan Thomas guy. What was he involved in? How deep does it go? Well, Throssell goes on to underline his connections too. One edition of the book, not this one I flashed on the screen, but an earlier one, has this dedication in the opening, and it's dedicated to Admiral Rufus Taylor, General Curtis LeMay, and the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff. So in 1963, these are some serious political and military heavyweights. So in the 1960s, Admiral Rufus Taylor was the Director of Naval Intelligence. And if you look at all the advancements in the programs that are currently studying UFOs, they all come from Naval Intelligence. So there's a long pedigree of Naval Intelligence being connected to the UFO phenomenon. The deputy director of, he was also the deputy director of the Ultra Secret Defense Intelligence Agency, and he was the deputy director of the CIA, this Admiral Rufus Taylor. General Curtis LeMay, it was dedicated to also, has long been rumored to have been a cog in the assassination of US President John F. Kennedy.
Well, we might find out very soon.
There's that connection again. So I wonder, he wrote this foreword dedicating it to these guys, but does that mean he was connected to them because of the projects that he was on? Or was it a bit of a slight?
That's what I was thinking.
Was it a little bit to say, look what I'm going to talk about, guys. You can't stop me.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's hard to tell. But the fact that they're mentioned is pretty incredible, pretty telling. And Throssell writes, with friends like these, it's curious that Chan Thomas has almost vanished into history. Again, he appeared on Johnny Carson in 1965, but after that, the articles disappeared.
But why would he appear on Johnny Carson? How did he build up such popularity?
He was talking about the cataclysm idea.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he'd be a great guest to have on the show because it's, you know, probably an intriguing topic. Thrussell said, look, we contacted his family for comment. They weren't willing to go on the record. Which again is kind of interesting. Like you'd want to talk about your relative, wouldn't you?
Well, unless you're threatened.
And that was the same thing with Townsend Brown. Like it was very difficult. And that's how we got the book. I can't remember the author's name. So ever since I gave up caffeine, my memory's just like gone.
No. It's just like this.
A muscle. I got to build it up again.
No, it's gone. It's like it's never coming back. It's gone.
The caffeine just atrophied it to nothing.
Right. Yep.
Shatskin. Remember Paul Shatskin, who wrote the book on Townsend Brown? He worked closely with the daughter to get that information out. So I actually hope that Chan Thomas, one of his surviving relatives, maybe has access to memoirs or some kind of information.
Yeah, they may not know.
Yeah, exactly.
They may not know anything.
And in the end, he gives a quote from Chan Thomas who said, "A cataclysm accomplishes many things. It stops unbridled and irresponsible reproduction, being the best population regulator known."
Like what the Greys are saying?
"It stops worldwide pollution of our planet and provides for the restoration of pure water in lakes, rivers, and oceans." Also what the Greys are saying. "And it stops man's process of dehumanizing himself with narcotics, mass crime, and terrible authority."
And digital technologies.
"Above all, it gives mankind a chance to start over once more, and this time do it right without intellectual or spiritual imprisonments." Weird. Meanwhile, Thrussell writes, "Billionaires build Armageddon-proof bunkers around the globe. Do they know something we don't?"
I don't even think that will save them.
Or are they also just suffering from apocalypse fever?
But you know what? It makes sense when you think about it, right? And then, because I've been reading a lot recently about the simulation hypothesis, and it's this idea that essentially the simulation has to reset in the context of these sorts of apocalyptic stories, right? So humanity reaches a certain point and we just reset. And the way to do that through us, if it was a simulation, although this could just be through a creator or you know, if you want to get more spiritual, you know, you can go down that path. But essentially it is a way of keeping humanity in check for all the reasons he just described.
Just cosmic cycles.
Yeah.
There's cycles in everything.
Everything
in nature.
In nature.
So why wouldn't there be cycles in the solar system, in the Earth, in the solar system, in the galaxy, in the universe?
Well,
not whatever is beyond.
I think the idea is, it's like humanity, and perhaps we have done it in the past, but humanity needs to reach a point where we can leave this planet. Like, and it seems like every time this reset happens, it's just before humanity reaches a point where we could achieve interstellar travel.
The gods are like,
you can't leave this space.
So that leads us to the vibe shift that's happening, because I feel like the vibe is shifting and the age of secrecy is ending. Speaking about cosmic cycles, there's a change in the air. And case in point, like I mentioned earlier, there's more high-profile individuals going on the record explicitly stating the reality of aliens and the US government's knowledge of them. Forget about UAPs. UAPs are boring.
Well, I think they're distractions.
Who cares about what they're flying? What about the beings that are controlling them? That's what we care about. Here's the trailer to the film I mentioned earlier, The Age of Disclosure. It's by Hollywood director Dan Farrar. He did Ready Player One and the previous UFO documentary, The Phenomenon.
Oh, yes.
But this looks really intriguing. Let's take a listen.
"The American people are ready to receive the truth.
Humanity is not the only intelligence in the universe.
Humanity is not the only intelligent species.
We are absolutely not alone.
Non-human intelligence exists.
UAPs are real. They're here, and they're not human. I spent 25 years as a senior official with the CIA.
I worked on highly classified UAP programs.
28 years as an astrophysicist.
I served as the fourth director of national intelligence.
Director of aviation security in the National Security Council.
A one-star admiral after 32 years of service.
People that come forward with this, I feel like they've taken their life in their own hands.
I was recruited to a highly sensitive government program that investigated unidentified aerial phenomena.
For over 16 years, on behalf of the U.S. government, I worked as a senior intelligence official on the unidentified aerial phenomenon topic.
We learned that the U.S. government was involved in a long-running secret war with other nations to collect and reverse engineer vehicles not made by humans.
I have seen with my own eyes non-human craft and non-human beings.
It's rotating.
fleet of them.
The first country that cracks the code on this technology will be the leader for years to come.
China has established its own version of a UAP task force.
You think for a second that they wouldn't consider using it to achieve their ends of domination?
This is similar to the Manhattan Project. This is the atomic weapon on steroids.
This is so secret, very, very few people in our entire government have been allowed access to it.
Even presidents have been operating on a need-to-know basis, but that begins to ramp out of control.
It's not acceptable to have secret parts of government that no one ever sees.
You better be careful about a government that doesn't trust its people, because there's no telling what they'll pull on you.
This is the biggest discovery in human history.
You had information being locked away that could change the trajectory for species.
It has so many beneficial impacts, including clean energy.
We should have disclosure today. We should have disclosure tomorrow. The time has come.
They think it's going to make a difference.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's another Talking Heads video.
What else you want to know?
Everything!
It's all a distraction. And you can read between the lines, right?
Oh, what do you mean when you say, I hate that? It's all a distraction. Distracting from what?
Distracting from what the reality is, what the truth is. I don't know what the truth is, but I don't believe that we're being told what's real. I don't think, this is the thing, the entirety of the UFO phenomenon up until recently has been cover and conceal, like everything. Cover it, conceal it, deny it. But that's what's been going on. Now, all of a sudden, they're just going to turn around and go, oh, yeah, look, here's my security clearance, and I've had this for 26 years, and I've seen aliens, and I've seen like all this, right? When all this stuff, weird stuff is going on, but can you read between the lines? They're talking there about the other countries. Do you think that China and Russia would use it?
So I'm glad you picked that up.
Put more money into the military-industrial complex.
Yeah, I think that's really important because
That's what it's about.
I'm glad you caught that because that's a very subtle shift in the messaging. And you can see how maybe, you know, they've got this big Hollywood producer to come in. It's they've got all the names, all the respectable talking heads coming in. Now, it remains to be seen whether we'll actually see some new footage. I mean, I saw a comment today. Someone said, look, what we actually need is, you know, just real undeniable footage of these craft and the beings that pilot them. Like, we can see a million...
Yeah, officially, from the government, right from the desk of the
White House. A million 10-second clips of an egg rolling on the ground. We need to see these extraterrestrials themselves. We need to see credible, undeniable footage that is backed up by multiple individuals. Now, we've got the individuals, but we don't have the footage. But that subtle shift saying, hey, this is a war with other countries, and hey, China, we can't let China get a hold of this... That's a really intriguing development.
And they're also dangling the fruit of clean energy. So it's like, oh, you know, if we can harness this, you'll get free energy as well. So let's pump a whole heap of money into these programs that are within the military-industrial complex once again.
Look, I don't think it's a distraction, but I wouldn't use those terms. I don't necessarily disagree with you. Like, I agree with what you're saying that we're never going to get the full picture. It's the government, okay? We're not going to get the full picture. But I wouldn't say it's a distraction. I would say that it's a crafting of the narrative for a particular purpose.
Well, it's control.
And that particular purpose could be the release and acknowledgement of this information, but handled in a particular way that still serves whoever holds the power currently.
Of course. And maybe that's what's happened. You know, I was shaking my head there, but perhaps, you know, it did occur to me that you could be right in the sense that what they're going to do is so much information has gotten out now. Like, they have denied and hidden it, but it's a different world, right? Society has changed. People are more, and perhaps I feel in some way, like I think COVID maybe has accelerated this in the sense that so many people just complied, right? So, because it's like everyone wants to do the right thing. Everyone wants to, for the most part, I think people are good. They want to be good. They want to help fellow people. And they went, oh, we just complied. Now we found out that many of the things we were told about was absolute complete bullshit, that it wasn't for the safety of everyone. It was for making people huge amounts of money. And so the populace is waking up and the populace is going, you lie to us. So if you're lying to us about that, what else are you lying to us about? Oh, UFOs.
It's also occurred to me that much of the old guard that held the secrets.
They're gone.
Exactly. Around the type of phenomenon, like the stories that we've covered from the 70s and 80s and perhaps earlier and beyond, yeah, they've passed away. They're no longer with us. So that old guard, you know, can't hold back the truth anymore. And I think whistleblowers are coming forward because the atmosphere has changed.
That's right.
It is easier now to tell the story, and I think they would feel to a certain degree safer to tell their story. It's still risky for these individuals to come forward, I think, but you know, it's good to see something like this in the works, and I'm actually looking forward to seeing it.
Well, I think you're right, though. I don't think it's going to make a difference. I think what it's going to do is it's going to, because this is what it's about. It's all about control. It is going to use your term, craft the narrative.
But is that a more palatable narrative to the American public that, hey, our adversary, if we've got to stop them from getting this? And that also, it also occurred to me that that is also a reason to say, this is why we can't give you all the information, because that's then right. China will get it.
It's a national security threat.
So maybe this film's going to push that narrative as well.
But look, I don't necessarily believe this is what happened, although there are a lot of questions there. So let's go to the moon landing, right? And this is where, you know, cynics and people that, you know, will completely distract from my argument and go, that's ridiculous. But like, the rumor is that you're talking about bringing in big Hollywood people to do this. Well, apparently for the moon landings, they brought in Stanley Kubrick.
Right.
So it's like, is this just the same thing? Like, it's just crafting the narrative.
That's an interesting point, yeah. Once Hollywood gets involved, you know that it's fake.
There's something going
it's
on.
It's all fake. Mm. Well, you know, moving on, I wanted to quickly talk about this interpretation of the Göbekli Tepe pillar. I'm not sure how much time I have for this, because Ethical Skeptic, it's theethicalskeptic.com. He really is detailed with his write-ups, and often I have to admit I struggle in comprehending every single detail he's talking about, especially when you get to the exothermic core mantle decoupling Janabekov oscillation hypothesis.
Oh yeah, ECDO. I mean, what's the? It's, like, it's not difficult, Ben.
Dude, look at this. I tried to do this on a Plus episode. From memory, I think I just gave up halfway through.
Like, I would have read the first paragraph, like, oh, I'm out.
Look at the detail he goes
it's
into.
Like, really
this guy's
detailed.
Been an engineer for decades and decades. He's worked all over the world on major infrastructure projects. He knows what he's talking about. He's got a very scientific mind as well. But sometimes I'm just like, ChatGPT, dumb it down.
And is that what you've done for this?
To a degree. Yeah.
Nice.
It's always like, make it simpler, ChatGPT, and it makes it simpler. And I'm like, make it even simpler, ChatGPT. It's like, makes it simpler. I'm like, no, you don't understand. I'm retarded. Make it even simpler. And so,
from a scientific standpoint,
he says, for years I've chosen silence regarding the interpretation and dating of the various relics uncovered at Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, of course. He says, without direct participation in the field, the archaeological work and the archaeological work conducted at the site, I have preferred to defer to the expertise involved.
Of whom?
You know, the archaeologists working there.
Right.
He says, however, there comes a point where the cautious, obtuse, and at times arrogant approach often employed by archaeology strains the boundaries of human tolerance. So he's not happy with what they've been doing. He talks about how disappointed he is that, and I didn't know this, but Göbekli Tepe is shut down.
Yeah, you were telling me about this morning. What do you mean it was shut down?
It's shut down for archaeological work. UNESCO came in, the Turkish government, the WEF was involved.
Oh, of course
they were. And they basically, they shut it down after they found a penguin.
Why would the WEF be involved in an archaeological dig? This is like weird Indiana Jones, James Bond kind of stuff.
I like that you asked me about that, but not about the penguin.
Oh, we'll get back to the penguin. I mean, that's, you know, stunning, but...
they found this carving with a penguin on it.
So why would...
And after this, they were like, oh... So even some of the archaeologists were like, oh, maybe we've found enough and we just need to spend the next couple of decades focusing on what we've dug up rather than digging up more. Now, they've excavated 5% of Göbekli Tepe. And that's just one site. There's two, potentially three sites this region in Turkey.
I still don't understand. Like, why is it that... you're digging up this stuff. Why is it you stop at a penguin? You're like, okay.
The penguin changes everything, man.
We've found everything we need to know.
Okay, think about it. Penguin, exclusive to the Southern Hemisphere.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah. Turkey, Why is there a penguin in Turkey?
That's okay. Good point. Yeah. Why is it? Well, it would be. Would suggest that there would be climatological differences.
Yeah. Does that imply
at the time?
Something that Chan Thomas was describing, that there was this huge shift and penguins used to be in that part of the world? Or does it suggest some ancient trade route that's never been discovered? Anyway, it throws all these implications. And the ethical skeptic was pointing out that once this emerged and other strange things like it, the general feeling of the archaeological community was, ooh.
Oh, because it's
controversial.
Yeah.
That's going to make me have to rewrite one of the papers I wrote last year.
And upset my funding.
Uh-oh, I don't want to do that. And he has this anecdote from a conference he was at in Houston a decade ago, and he had the opportunity, he said, to converse after hours with some of the presenters, and some of them were archaeologists. And he said...
Penguin archaeologist?
No, he was just fascinated with this one archaeologist he spoke to, and he asked her about Göbekli Tepe. And he said she looked off to the side and offered this disconcerted expression. And he said, she said to him, it's been shut down.
By Big Penguin.
By Big Penguin, yeah. He said it's been shut down and reconstructed for tourism now. The latest,
what?
Yeah, the latest findings are, let us say, existentially upsetting to various groups, she said, and I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, I mean, a site like that, which is just so important, I understand, you know, showing it to people. Like, I think tourism is important because people need to see it, they need to experience it. But surely they could find a way where you could have archaeologists exploring it while the tourism is going.
Nope. They don't want the archaeologists exploring it. That's what it looks like today. So that's what it was looking like. Where it's just the, you know, the desert. And
so they've got a hut over it like the Terracotta Warriors. Yeah,
they're digging into the hill, getting the stuff out. This is what it looks like today.
Mm.
They've built this big enclosure. It's a full-on tourist site. Now, I understand making it a tourist site, but the devil's in the detail. See all these trees here?
That immediately struck me. Why, if there's potential for, you know, you to dig, why would you build trees over
this
everything?
Is where
plant trees over
this
everything?
Is where UNESCO and the World Economic Forum came in. They provided the funding and the impetus create this center and plant all these trees. Now, this is a very specific type of tree. These are olive trees that are protected in Turkey.
So you can't mow them down.
You cannot dig them up. You cannot remove them. And furthermore,
Klaus Schwab is absolutely a Bond villain. He absolutely is.
Furthermore, these particular olive trees damage the layers of soil and destroy archaeological sites. There's a quote
it's
here that
just
says
sickening.
The tree's adaptability can disturb even compacted layers of soil or buried features more aggressively than many other tree species. They can live for hundreds, sometimes thousands of years, and their roots repeatedly alter the stratigraphy of the site, blending or displacing archaeological layers and making it more difficult to interpret the timeline
of
human activity.
That's what it is.
So yeah, I know this sounds very conspiratorial, but essentially,
it's not, though.
To put it in a nutshell, essentially what they've done is stopped all future archaeology at this site and buried it under bureaucracy.
And also damaged it.
It's going to be damaged by those trees, and you can't do anything because those trees are protected by all this legislation in Turkey. And this is what he's talking about. It's like the real interesting discoveries seem to be covered up's not quite the word. It's more there's an apathy against the effort that's going to be required to examine these ground-shattering discoveries because they're going to change things. They're going to change our understandings of our history and the region and the way human beings have developed over time.
Yeah, so it's not about finding the truth. It's about maintaining the narrative.
So Ethical Skeptic had had enough, and he wanted to revisit this Pillar 43, its handbags, its symbols, and really get a better understanding of what it was all about because he's at the point where he no longer trusts these archaeologists to do a good job. He says, you know, some of the descriptions over the years have been that it's a map or that it's showing different terrain in the region or that's iconography for hunter-gatherers.
Does it all? I mean, I know that that's this particular image, but does it actually align to any star systems or astronomical phenomena?
Yes. He says Pillar 43 unequivocally depicts the northern sky at Göbekli Tepe in 14,800 BCE.
Right. Okay. So that's how we can get the dating on it.
He says that the Is it the Condor?
On the left there? Or there's two of them, isn't there?
Okay, so he says, first, I've conjectured that the vulture is not merely a condor. The condor is congruent with the constellation of Cygnus. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's the first thing. Second, I speculate the round circle carved into the stone, the centerpiece of the image, is not the sun, but instead represents the celestial North Pole. So, you know, the Earth's rotational axis projected. And finally, he says, I presume that the stone's artist was both skilled in their knowledge of the night sky over their home and bore a desire to communicate an important message to those generations who followed. So in this exhibit here, he says, was that the right one? Is it this one? So I'll just zoom in a little bit so we can get a closer look. So
is that Scorpius below it, or is it just a scorpion? Like, does that link up with?
He doesn't actually mention the scorpion in this. He says the nine iconographs carved correspond strikingly well to the nine asterisms he's identified in the Skyfield map, which is on the right here.
Oh, well, I think that is. Is that Scorpius there?
Well, all of those constellations would have emerged, you know, thousands of years later. So they didn't exist.
Wouldn't they have moved?
The stars would still have been there, but the connections between them wouldn't necessarily have been in place back then, unless it's much older than we understand, the understanding of the constellations. The carvings of the stone align precisely with the night sky as it would have appeared around 14,800 BCE. Four birds, including the condor, two snakes, a scorpion, a dog, and what may be a headless frog, all align exactly with the star formations visible in the heavens at that time. He says the odds of this occurring by accident are about 1 in 10,000.
Mm-hmm.
The H symbol in the upper right, which is this kind of pinky-colored thing up here in the top right. See, there's two H symbols.
Yeah.
They are symbols that represent the rising and the setting of the sun both before and after a cataclysmic event. So that's why they're in two different orientations, because something's occurred that's shifted the Earth's axis in a way. He says, these align strongly with my exothermic core mantle decoupling hypothesis. Okay. So I got to show you this video. To explain this is beyond the 10 minutes we've got left on this show, but let me just play you the video to kind of give you a sense of how this works. It's got to do, like I said earlier, with these structures that are deep within the Earth, and they have so much mass, they affect the, you know, geomagnetic activity and the rotation of the Earth. They're called the large, low-velocity shear provinces. They're like Earth's hidden gyroscope.
Right.
You can see them on the image on the right there. They're absolutely massive. And the way they work, this is the theory, not his theory, but this has been developed over time. The way they work is a little bit like this NASA video. Let's take a look. So this is a knob spinning in zero gravity, like a little handle.
On its own axis.
See how it spins on its own axis, but then just flips its orientation?
Yes.
This is what the Earth does because of those giant structures deep within the Earth's crust.
I mean, that makes sense. On a macro scale.
And because there's been changes in those structures and changes in the magnetic field, the argument is that this flip is going to happen soon.
So do they have an understanding as to why that occurs, or is it random?
No one knows. It's an absolute mystery of why this occurs. And so, yeah, going back to his breakdown, he eventually gets to interpreting what is essentially. Can you see that on the screen there?
Yes.
See how it's almost like there's fire above and this green below, and then there's these little squares, 54321 N12345.
So is it representing like a plasma storm or something, or fire raining down?
Yeah, so the upper chiseling is red and the lower implies green. He claims this is...
But that's not on the stone, obviously.
No, but upper is generally depicted as red, lower is green. I don't know why. But he claims that this is depicting some kind of aurora borealis type effect.
Okay.
So
which could happen with a reversal of a magnetic field.
Yeah, some kind of major change to the magnetic field of the Earth being depicted in the sky. The 11 boxes you see on the screen, true north is the center, with the 5 points on either side constituting the extent to which this activity in the sky spreads across the northern sky.
So are they like points in the earth? Is that what it's describing?
They're just mapping out. He says it's kind of similar to how like crude bearing points of steerage works at sea.
Okay.
And so it's just mapping out, you know, how extensive it is. And then he gets to the handbags, but these aren't actually handbags. He reckons these represent three hills in Turkey, right? So Tepe in Turkish is hill.
Yep.
And so you've got Göbekli Hill, you've got Seyburk Hill, which is another potential find. Karahan Tepe is another archaeological site that has been uncovered to some degree. But
what's this torrent above?
He claims each of these hills appears to be hollowed out near the top, potentially signifying shelters or refuges created in response to a signifying event. So torrent above could be the magnetic, electromagnetic activity in the sky. It could be water. It could be waves, water, rain.
Wasn't that something that Dr. Robert Schock described? Wasn't he describing some weird thing falling from the sky during one of these periods? But it was like electromagnetic.
Well, that's electromagnetic, but this can also create, obviously, if there's a shift in the mantle, like what Chan was describing, Chan Thomas, it would create a, you know, shifting of the oceans, and there would be be massive flooding. And so he says both Göbekli Tepe, Karahan Tepe, and possibly Seyburk Tepe appear to represent hollowed out hills designed to shelter three sub-tribes of humans and possibly animals during a period of significant environmental stress and or social upheaval.
So here's the kicker. Are those other two sites, do they have WEF-funded olive trees planted on them?
Not yet.
Not yet.
There's still potential in those sites. But what I found really fascinating is he goes into the topological map of these sites. Here's Göbekli Tepe. And you'll see below, the blue is obviously the peak where, you know, there's evidence in the ancient past of flooding, massive flooding, right? Now, look at
these are now desert areas.
Yeah, obviously this is thousands of years in the past.
And high elevation.
You see on down below, see where this little circle is on the map? I don't know if you can see it down here.
Yes, yeah.
This is where Göbekli Tepe is. It's the only place that doesn't flood.
It's on the peak.
It's like these people knew precisely where to build these points. Now, that's the narrative. It's like, here's where we're going to build these underground structures. We're going to be safe. The flood water's not going to get it. We're going to dig underground so that we're protected from whatever's happening in the sky.
It won't be flooded.
And he claims that there were three groups that were created because they wanted their best chance at survival.
Of course.
And so
they're basically fallout vaults.
Yeah, they're fallout vaults. That's what they are. And so his full reinterpretation, redescription of this panel is this. In the days when the great year axis aligned above the left wing of the celestial condor, an ominous portent appeared in the night sky, one unseen in our lifetimes but foretold through the legends of our forefathers. Flames of green below and red above raged across 5 points of bearing either side of true north, terrifying our tribespeople and signaling to our elders it was time to abandon our farms on the beloved plain and retreat to the mountains. And so, heeding the wisdoms of their ancestors, they knew exactly where to build these divisions of three groups of their people. Each task was seeking refuge atop the highest hills. And at the summit of these three hills, the tribes hollowed out reinforced chambers beneath the ground, creating sanctuaries to withstand the calamity, the torrential onslaught, and give hope that at least one group of people might survive. And of course, it was also used to tell a story to future generations so that we wouldn't make the same mistake, so that we would be prepared as well.
It's a warning that we're not heeding, or it's being hidden from us. And the fact that the WEF has been involved makes me think it's being hidden from us.
Yeah, doesn't it make you think? They're like, well, we can't let the normies find out what's coming because we don't want to disrupt our plans to save ourselves.
Yeah.
I can see that scenario playing out. But honestly, I think it's more apathy. I think it is more that people don't want to disrupt the current narrative.
I don't get that though, because like I know I referenced funding there, but really, like imagine the name you would make for yourself as an archaeologist and a scientist, if you uncovered something that is shockingly, you know, life-changing.
Dude, the name you make for yourself is conspiracy theorist. You get called a conspiracy theorist.
Yeah, that's true.
Look what happened to Graham Hancock.
Yeah.
He's called a conspiracy theorist. You get this pejorative thrown at you.
Mm.
Anyone that entertains this idea is a conspiracy theorist.
But I don't know if that term carries the same kind of weight anymore. Going back to what I was saying with the shifting dynamic.
Hopefully it's being eroded down. I'll link to all that information in the show notes. Yeah, you definitely want to check out the exothermic core mantle decoupling Janabekov oscillation hypothesis. That's my personal favorite.
And put it into AI.
That's my favorite. You read it as a bedtime story to your kids. They'll be out in no time. You'll be out in no time as well. Again, I'll link to all that along with the UFO stuff. The new documentary is coming out as well. And of course, don't forget, we have Jake Barber, the full 2.5 hour interview. Is it still going? I think it's going.
Surely not.
No, it's stopped. Yeah. It's finally stopped now. So it's 2 hours and 49 minutes that went for. So you can go through that on Tuesday for the Plus show. Well, no comment.
Well, I was just thinking about, like, can I face that? But no, I really want to actually find that story. I want to hear the story about him actually seeing alien beings.
Yeah, there was a clip I was dragging through, and he claims he's seen alien beings. And Ross Coulthart's like, you know, how does that make you feel? And he's just like, I'm over it. And I was like, are you me?
But I wonder if that's part of the whole narrative as well, right? It's like, I actually saw someone on Twitter make a really accurate comment about, you know, you and I deciding to wrap up Mysterious Universe, at least for us, you know, on this year. And essentially it's become mainstream. Like, it's become so mainstream that there's now an apathy attached to it. It's funny you should use the word apathy, but that's really what it is. Yeah, people are reasonably excited about what it is, but the reality is most of the population will just be like, eh.
Like, that's true. It's becoming less unique as well.
Because it's not unique.
There's like a billion people talking about it.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not niche anymore.
It's not niche. It's not fringe.
It was more fun when it was niche.
It was. Yeah. And all that's kind of just really diminished now. And it's become this.
Now it's like you can hear it on Fox News.
Yeah. Well, it is. There was an interview just today.
Yeah.
So it's like.
Yeah. Anyway, that's a wrap for our free show. A lot coming up in our Plus extension. We're going to be looking at a haunted honky-tonk piano.
Pretty much. Samurai warnings.
Piece of cat.
Ghostly samurai hornings, not samurai cat.
Samurai warnings.
Warnings. Warnings. Now I've caught whatever you've got from your caffeine issue. We're also going to be going into running into.
Fucking failure. Stop being a loser.
All right, well, then just sign up for Plus and find out what's coming up.
It'd be awesome if that's what Trump's button played. Anytime some, like, female world leader comes in, he just presses it. Sign up for Plus. Head to mysteriousuniverse.org/plus. Get the sale before it ends. $99 for MU Max in our final year of Mysterious Universe. Sign up so that you're with us to the very end. Not of Mysterious Universe, because that's going to keep going. But for the very end of us doing Mysterious Universe. Mysteriousuniverse.org/plus. Sign up today. Help support your favorite show. You get access to the big extensions we do on these shows every single Friday. You also get an entirely exclusive season that comes out on Tuesdays. You're getting more than double the content if you sign up for Plus. See there, that sale is still going. 40% off MU Max, which gives you access to our massive back catalog as well, going back 16, 17 years. All the videos are there, all the extensions, all the Plus shows. Sign up today and get access to all of it. MysteriousUniverse.org/plus. Sign up today. That's a wrap for this free edition of MU. Thanks for listening. Thanks for watching. If you're on Plus, stick around for the great stuff after the break. For everyone else, we'll catch you next week. Welcome back to your Plus extension.